Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
They're singing, go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go!
Go home!
Hey, Chicago,
go home!
You say, go to go!
Now, good morning, Dan and Amy. Let me be the first to congratulate the Colorado Rockies.
Hey, hey.
Game well played.
That was the longest playoff
better
game
team won
ever in the history of Wrigley Field. 5 hours, that bad boy.
But you know what? I know we like to say it's all about the coaching because I coach and we don't take L's. But in regards to baseball, why in the world did Joe Maddon put Hayward in when it was the bases were loaded, two outs in the seventh inning? Why didn't he put Kyle Schwarber in? I mean, was he thinking that this will be his moment? I mean, if I was managing the Cubs, that's what I would have done. Kyle Schwarber, great guy, friend of the show.
All right, so the Cubs season is over then. We're moving on.
We're not going to break down the game?
Yeah.
Right. Exciting 2-1 loss, 13 innings.
I'll look for your postmortem. Yeah. Save it for the Hawks.
Same
for the Bears.
Did you watch any of the game, or you hate us that much?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it.
Well, You wouldn't have made that decision, right? You would have put it in Schwarber.
And so Cub season has come to a merciful end, and we move right along.
Oh, and I heard somebody say, just wait till next year. Shut up. I just want everybody to go home. I'd like some peace and quiet, please.
There you go. You get your neighborhood back.
Thank you. No more helicopters overhead. Thank you.
All right. Getting to the pressing issue of the day. Which is, of course, the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. FBI may wrap up their investigation as soon as today.
Yeah.
And yesterday, I was punctuated with sort of a revenge of the exes, for Blase Ford as well as for Swetnick.
And you know what? They deserve it because Kavanaugh's past is being completely upended, you know, turned upside down. He was with a friend who played for the NBA when he was at a bar fight. So we have every right to do that to them.
Okay.
We have every right to know about their ex-boyfriends and their alleged bad behavior, too.
I know, exactly. Look, that's the way Maury Povich would do it. That's the way the FBI and the American public should do it when it comes to the Supreme Court confirmation. Christine Blasey Ford's ex-boyfriend contradicts her testimony under Week last week that she had never helped anyone prepare for a polygraph. Her former boyfriend, name redacted, also said Ford neither mentioned Kavanaugh nor mentioned she was a victim of sexual misconduct during the time they were dating from about 1992 to about 1998.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
He also said she had no fear of flying.
What do you think happened
with those two lovebirds?
I don't know
if it ended well either. I don't know by the tone.
Do things ever end well?
Sometimes they do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they end amicably, but
not immediately.
Yeah, because you know what? You're stressed out and you're hurt and you've got all these emotions. You feel lonely. You feel betrayed.
Okay, we're going to talk about your relationship.
No,
we're trying
fine.
To talk about Christie Blasey Ford.
Christie Blasey Ford.
Yeah.
Wasn't she the one stepping out on him? Yeah. Hey, how? I mean, hello. Did I say hello?
Okay, that's so indicated. You go, girl.
Well, she was the one stepping out. Guys always get accused of being cheaters and whores. She was the one who was breaking hearts in this relationship.
All right, welcome to today's installment of the Wendy Williams Show.
Okay, and also, too, she lived in a one-bedroom crammed apartment with him. There was never any issues of a second door or having, you know, panic attacks because she was in a confined space.
You're doing a great Trump impersonation, mocking Christine Blasey
Ford. One beer! That's what it was.
Yeah, 500 square feet, that apartment, according to this letter penned by her ex. Yeah. Huh. In addition to that, you got Julie Swetnick. Well, you got a couple people coming forward with respect to Julie Swetnick. One of them appeared on Laura Ingraham's show, Richard Venecci.
Yeah, where's he from? And I don't understand the love child. Did he have a family on the side, when he talked about his family, was he talking about his mom and brothers and sisters?
I just don't care. Here's why he said he came forward.
Because I couldn't figure it out.
Let's try that again. No. All right, we're no audio. Well, we'll see if we can effort Richard Venecci. It was rather a colorful interview that he gave to Laura Ingraham. And also did you see this other one?
Which other one?
The other Swetnick X. Who said she has Dennis Ketterer, former weatherman from Channel 7 in Washington. Send a signed statement to Senate Judiciary claiming Swetnick had psychological problems. And
oh, yeah, she wasn't sure what team she was on?
No. Mm-mm. Like to engage in intercourse with more than one male partner at the same time.
Oh. So this chain gang, rape gang thing, she liked it. Oh, God, that sounds really... Excuse me.
All right, we're gonna shower off, and we'll come back and try this again.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Revenge of the Exes Day yesterday in the Kavanaugh saga. A couple of exes of one Julie Swetnick came forward to claim that she has no credibility and other things even more salacious than that. And also an ex-boyfriend of Christine Blasey Ford suggesting she wasn't telling the truth under oath before Congress last week when she said she had never helped anyone prepare for a polygraph. He also added she had no fear of smaller confined spaces.
No fear of flying.
No need for a second door in the 500-square-foot apartment in which they lived, allegedly. Right, no fear of flying and the like. So
that's a pretty tiny confined space. I mean, we have about 500 square feet here, don't you think?
Yeah. I don't think.
Where's my second door?
I don't think we could live here.
And stop throwing ice at me.
Please. So one of the exes, this guy Richard Venecci.
Where is he from? I'm sorry. You know what? I'm sorry.
I mean,
I gotta stop.
Oh.
I think he's from Italy.
They lived in California. Then he got transferred to Panama. He said. Then he came back. They were seeing each other on and off for about 6 years
off,
in the 90s. '90s were tough for these ladies, according to their ex-boyfriends. Maybe because of their ex-boyfriends. I don't know. But here's what Richard Venecci said in terms of why he's coming forward now.
I mean, I believe I came over here just to basically tell the truth. I think it's my civil duty to do so, and that's one of the reasons why I came.
Uh-huh. And what he felt his civic duty to do was to tell about Julie Swetnick and how much she frightened the hell out of him.
Right after I broke up with her, she basically called me many times. And at one point, she basically said, you will never, ever see your unborn child alive. And I'm just going to go over there. I'm going to kill you guys.
Oh, okay.
She said she was going to kill you?
Yes. And that really scared me a little bit.
Yeah. Obviously, I am from the Oscar Wilde school of thought on this, which is women are not to be understood, Richard. They're to be loved. Oh. And so you just have to take such threats of your demise in stride.
Okay, so we're going from Dan Proft parenting tips to Dan Proft's advice on women. Justin, can you work on a little ditty for us there?
I'm just telling you.
You just know what you know.
And look, I'm Oscar Wilde. Enlisting the help of one of the wittiest wits of all time, uh-huh. Oscar Wilde.
Well, the fact that she threatened to kill him is it's a red flag.
It's a flag.
For future relationships that she might be getting in.
It's a flag. He also said she never mentioned being sexually assaulted at all. She did mention lawsuits against everybody else. No, he didn't mention that. That was the other ex.
Oh.
That said she liked to take it.
Stop.
Never mind.
She was exaggerating everything. If anybody knows Julie and the person, I mean, I know because I live with her. And everything that came out of her mouth was just exaggerations. And she never mentioned that to me at all. And it's something that I was very surprised to hear this. It's actually, I was very surprised to actually see her making these accusations because she had never, ever mentioned that to me at all.
Yeah. Hmm. He said he doesn't believe her.
Yeah, he did. Right. He didn't call her liars. Like, but I don't believe this story because she's, you know, she's been involved in a number of litigation. Because she sued people for frivolous things that never amounted to anything, except for waste of lawyers' times.
Can't waste Michael Avenatti's time. No such thing. Tony on the South Side.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Hey, Dan, I know how you like, you enjoyed my Tangerine Jesus. So
yes.
I got a name for Mrs. Swednick. And I know how, you know, how Amy doesn't like creamy Bob.
Okay,
and,
gross. Yes.
You know, I enjoy that. I enjoy El Gallito. How about for Julie Swednick? We're going to call her Julie Sweatlick.
Ooh.
Because of all her sexual, because of her sexual exploits. Come on now. Sweatlick. Later, guys.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay.
Tony really liked that one.
He loved it.
Oh, that's another one of those words, like moist.
Oh, no. Moist is gross, creamy.
It's disgusting.
Okay,
that's
gross.
Also disgusting. Holly and Hudson, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, you guys. I would like to thank Brett Kavanaugh. He has brought my college or my high school class of 1982 together like no reunion committee could. We've all been going through our yearbook, trading barbs, people I haven't heard from. We've had a blast over this. Brett Kavanaugh is like our new hero of anybody who graduated in the early 80s. We love this guy.
Have you talked to Squee by any chance?
Well, here's the thing, Dan.
This
has been dream date week for me because every allegation that comes out about Brett Kavanaugh, I think he's the sexiest guy alive. I think he should be voted. I mean,
really?
From Beach Week.
Oh, the Beach Week
fight.
Letter.
The Beach Week
letter.
Oh, yeah. Right here.
Oh, I love that.
Sure.
I am sad that I wasn't at Beach Week.
Prolific.
Lifting a keg over
his
head.
Oh, yeah. That is dreamy. Oh, forget about it.
But you know who else is blowing my skirt up these days?
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Hello.
Grassley, Hatch, Graham,
oh,
Kennedy.
Oh, sure. They still got
GOP,
it, those old men. Yeah.
Hey, they're coming from behind here. Can I say that? They are great.
Well, hello.
Well, the beach letter. Awesome.
Thank you so much, Holly, for that. And I do actually, I really appreciate Holly's call because what she's saying is that being a grumpy old man is sexy again. And that's good news for me.
Yeah, that's when you cue the "I'm bringing sexy back." What?
Well, no, now we can't.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
I'm bringing sexy back.
Yeah.
The mother boys don't know how to act.
Yeah.
I think it's special what's behind your back.
Yeah. Come on,
so
take it to the corner.
Worst halftime show ever.
Yeah.
Dan and Amy. Accompanied by Justin Timberlake. Okay. Yeah, please. Goodness sakes. His voice is annoying enough. I don't have to amplify it. Trump was in MISSISSIPPI yesterday,
yeah.
One of his signature rallies. And he had much to say about... about Ms. Ford's testimony and about how Kavanaugh has been treated and about Swetnick.
And the crowd was chanting, Kavanaugh, Kavanaugh.
Were they singing Kavanaugh like...
Kavanaugh! No, they were just chanting Kavanaugh.
It would have been better if they sang it.
What's happening now? They had gang rape. Many times. Well, that turned out to be false. So many different charges... Guilty until proven innocent, that's very dangerous for our country. That's very dangerous for our country. And I have it myself all the time. But for me, it's like a part of the job description. Let it happen to me. Shouldn't happen to him. Shouldn't happen to him. What he's going through, 36 years ago, this happened. I had one beer, right? I had one beer. Well, do you think it was... Nope, it was one beer. Oh, good.
Yeah.
How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. What neighborhood was it in? I don't know. Where's the house? I don't know. Upstairs, downstairs, where was it? I don't know. But I had one beer. That's the only thing I remember. And a man's life is in tatters. A man's life is shattered. His wife is shattered. His daughters, who are beautiful and incredible young kids. They destroy people. They want to destroy people. These are really evil people. And then you see... And then you see the people that are doing it. I know everyone. I could tell you things about every one of them.
Real evil people. That was buried because, of course, everybody in the D.C. press corps grabbed onto his mocking of Christine Blasey Ford for remembering she had one beer and not remembering a lot of other important details. Good idea for Trump to take it there, even in a rally format. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Or at this point, better to stay silent and move this thing along to a vote, and barring anything more than what's been made public so far, coming from the FBI's look-see, it's full steam ahead.
I think he really stepped in it. I mean, I know he was playing to the crowd, and the crowd was chanting Kavanaugh. And I know he went off script and talked about her, but I would have left that alone. Why? He looks insensitive. He's perpetuating the stereotype that he doesn't care about female victims. But also, too, you've got a lot of undecided Republicans and some undecided Democrats. And it's Susan Collins not happy about hearing that last night. That didn't sit well with her. Also, Ford's attorney calling that he tweeted a vicious, vile, and soulless attack on Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. Is it any wonder that she was terrified to come forward and that other sexual assault survivors are as well? She was a remarkable profile in courage. He is a profile in cowardice.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. Boy.
But I mean, I just, and I'm not, and I haven't.
PR flag to come up with that rhetorical flourish.
I haven't been easy on Christine Blasey Ford. I don't believe her story. I'm sorry. Something happened to her, but it wasn't him in my mind, just from listening to her testimony and his testimony. But when he did that yesterday, made me so mad he didn't need to go there.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just sort of a hands-off. I mean, what she has to say and the testimony she provided is not beyond reproach, right, but it needs to be handled, like, at room temperature, without sarcasm, and to say, well, look, this is what you said. Now you have an ex-boyfriend that's saying something different than what you said. There's the things that you don't remember that are troubling. There's some conflicts with the statement as outlined in the 5-page memo that Rachel Mitchell penned after her questioning of Ms. Ford. So I would have just, you know, if you want to kind of do chapter and verse from the Mitchell memo, I think that's fair. It's fair game. This is what she said, and these are the problems, and this is the, just based on what they've presented and the lack of corroboration, there is no way that this should tube Kavanaugh's nomination. I mean, if you want to say that and then go off on Democrat senators, have at it. That's great rally fodder. Going after her in that way, I don't think was helpful.
He should not have touched that subject. And if he felt that way, have somebody else deliver that message, not the president.
Yeah.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey Depro answer line, 64636-DA. Then a quick comment. Somebody told me, too, yesterday, they said, well, she deserved it because of the lies that she brought forth. Well, I don't know if anybody deserves anything. You know, I mean, is she set financially for the rest of her life? Yeah, she's gotten more than $1 million that she can keep. She doesn't have to do, that can, you know, go to her kids' college fund, pay off her house.
Look, I think,
but
you,
I mean, if, to ridicule her in that public forum is classless.
Here's the thing, right? If you want to look at this from a Machiavellian perspective.
As I always do on Wednesday mornings.
If you want full boomerang... If you want the full boomerang effect on Democrats from this, then you handle it, frankly, like Lindsey Graham is. This isn't about Blasey Ford. This is about Senate Democrats and some of my Republican colleagues. The FBI doesn't need to query her again because we've got her. testimony on the record, walk away from Blasé Ford. Just walk away. Because there's so little to be gained by taking the approach that Trump took. And so if you want Democrats to pay the full price for the character assassination in which they've been engaged, for the absurdity they have foisted upon the American people, then you push Blasé Ford off to the side and you zero in on them, their antics, their lack of standing to make allegations that they have made, their rank hypocrisy, this entire circus that was precipitated by them and specifically by Dianne Feinstein. You keep it focused there. Because this, you know, mocking like he did is so easy to use against Republicans, against the president, and Republicans by extension in exactly the way that you just said.
And frankly, it's not good for the midterms. It motivates Democrats, and some have been sitting on their hands for a long time, as you said, to get out and vote.
Grant in Rockford, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, you two. Hey, I don't think Democrats could get much more motivated. They are, their vitriol knows no limits. But honestly, I think Trump did the right thing by going after her like that in public, because how else does the message get out there? Unless you listen to talk radio or you read Breitbart or something like that, his message isn't getting out there. It's just a slime fest, and they wanted to drag it in the gutter. But Trump isn't afraid to get in the gutter. We knew that when we elected him.
Well, I know, but Grant, you know, you're allowed to modulate your approach to different controversies at different moments. And so Trump was allowed to go after her, as you say, but why not do it in the way that I suggested? Take the Rachel Mitchell memo. This is a professional prosecutor. Here's her takeaways on the merits, on the facts. Here's the legal analysis. We don't need to get into name calling. We don't need to get into the mocking. We don't need to engage in the histrionics of the left. Let's just go chapter and verse on what Ms. Mitchell concluded from her interaction with Ms. Ford.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, Dan, but unfortunately, that's not the man who was elected.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I hear you.
We've got what we've got, so have a good one, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Grant. Yeah, I hear you, but I mean, it
doesn't mean he can doesn't. Yeah, there's room for growth.
You can surprise people.
Surprise me.
Yeah, you're allowed to surprise people. I surprised people when I said that I like Christopher Cross. A lot of people didn't think that I had
Chris
that kind
Cross
of.
Cross will make you jump. That Chris Cross.
Are you serious? Christopher Cross.
Christopher Cross.
Not Chris Cross. And I think, is it Chris or is it Cross? May he rest in peace. One of the two of the kids is no longer with us. Chris Cross. That there's a great example of our differences in musical taste. Grammy award-winning Christopher Cross, two kids wearing their clothes on backwards, jumping around. That's what you think of.
Think we're gonna make it.
See? Huh?
This is nice.
This is fun, responsible music. And that's what music should be, responsible.
A little stuffy. I like Chris Cross, bad and make you jump. Jump, Mac Daddy, make you.
The 120-year-olds at Ravinia love this.
Be sure to bring my cheese board.
Chris Cross from Kansasville.
Hey, Chris. Oh, I knew you were going to do that.
Yeah, I know. I'm so predictable.
How could you resist? Absolutely loved Trump yesterday. Loved him. I am so tired of this. And I have finally get 3 votes because it'll be me and my 2 daughters. One just turned 18, and I can't wait to get to the polls. And I'm a mother of daughters, and I am so angry over this whole crucifying this poor man who's done nothing but good that I can't even stand it. I'm actually voting early just to make sure my vote gets counted.
All right, very good. Thanks for the call, Chris. I'd like to hear that enthusiasm. Patrick in Glenview, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Go Trump.
Okay.
And I think it's good, you know, to fight back like he does, because that's what we want. You know, Dan, you're sitting on your hands like the typical Republicans with this play the fair same game. You know, we beat the Germans. We didn't play their game. We played our game and did it the right way. That's what Trump is doing. You know what? The ones that don't like Trump, they're not going to vote for him already. But the ones that like him, they will for sure go out and vote the more of this he does.
All right. Thanks for the call, Patrick. right. A Vichy Republican prof over here. Yeah. Doesn't have the stones to go after. All right.
I think he is the wrong Dan.
Joe in St. Charles.
Morning, Dan and Amy.
Good morning.
As I watch this unholy process unfold, I'm reminded of Sotomayor and Kagan going through, and I don't believe Kagan even ever tried a case, and yet with the skids grease went right through, and they're able to inflict their ideology on us serfs, and it's a terrible process, and it's terrible how the truth is suppressed and lies get all this publicity, and the average person, if they don't know better, can't navigate through all this.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Joe. Appreciate it. Steve in Joliet.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. President's the president. He can't help himself. I'm happy for Lindsey Graham stood up for something. I give him credit, but hey, I feel this may just get the silent majority. He plays that Nixonian. We might just win it, and good luck with Miss. How about a better one? Sweet lick, man. What do you think of that one? Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
What do you say?
Steve. Sweet lick?
Did somebody say crisscross? Come on. You know, Brett Kavanaugh was dancing to this with his buddies.
Yeah.
With the beach crew.
Before
beach
he
week.
Started Ralphing. Mike in Union.
Hey, good morning. I'm so glad Bruce Wolf's not there this morning to sing all these songs.
Yeah, me too.
reason for my call. During Ms. Ford's testimony, this is to her credibility, about the second door, and I've been thinking about this, but didn't she say there was another use for the second door with her students or something? I thought maybe that would ring a bell with somebody else.
No, yes, because she's housing Google interns. For the summer.
Right. I mean,
yes,
so,
that's why she needed a second door. Yeah. So the whole thing, and then she said she had panic attacks that weren't related to this. So she's kind of been all over the place in regards to this.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad the president's punching back. It's about time somebody started punching back. So
I think somebody should punch back, but not him. The message should not be coming from our president.
I understand Julie Swetnick has a second door for other reasons.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Well, one of the questions in the Van Dyke trial that was bandied about prior to its inception, will Jason Van Dyke take the stand in his own defense as part of the defense strategy? Because you know the jury's going to want to hear from the defendant. They always do. It doesn't mean they always get to, but they always do. Would Jason Van Dyke take the stand? Dan, the answer is yes, he will, and yes, he did yesterday.
And the question is, I mean, during the course of being on the witness stand, he did talk about what happened, why he chose to shoot Laquan McDonald. There were a lot of tears, and then he gained composure again and then would cry again. And I thought it was very, very brave and effective for him to take the stand. He needed to, because a lot of times, you're right, we don't hear from the defense. You don't hear from the man accused to take the stand.
Here's what Jason Van Dyke said he saw when he arrived at the scene and confronted Laquan McDonald.
His face had no expression. His eyes were just bugging out of his head. He had just these huge white eyes just staring right through me.
And Van Dyke said he addressed him. He didn't just open fire. Van Dyke's testimony, he told him to drop the knife.
I was yelling at him, drop the knife. I yelled, I don't know how many times, but that's all I yelled.
And did he keep advancing toward you?
He never stopped.
So the characterization is Laquan McDonald not walking away but advancing towards him. And here's what Van Dyke said McDonald did when he told him to drop the knife.
He waved the knife from his lower right side upwards across his body towards my left shoulder.
And when he did that, what did you do, officer?
I shot him.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. From what you've seen of the or read about the Van Dyke trial to this point, where do you come down as the defense probably wraps up today? Prosecution may call a couple of rebuttal witnesses, and then this goes to the jury.
Yeah, I am. I mean, it was a hard 90 minutes to watch during the examination and cross-examination. I thought he was truthful. I mean, those weren't fake tears that he was crying. You know, obviously, he didn't wake up that morning and think, oh, I'm going to go kill somebody today. And he talked about how he had gotten out his gun 20 other times in his career and never used it. You know, but this time he felt threatened enough that he had to use lethal force.
The other thing that was interesting, he testified to, again, his testimony. It's almost his disorientation. When he talked about when he was shooting Laquan McDonald, he thought he was retreating, meaning Van Dyke thought he was retreating, that Van Dyke was retreating.
Miss, I thought I was backpedaling that night.
You thought you were backpedaling as you're firing shot after shot after shot?
What I know now and what I thought at that time are two different things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, it's for a jury to assess the credibility of that statement. But it is, and also, you know, if you can have experts corroborate how police in a shooting, particularly in the first officer-involved shooting, which I believe this was with respect to Van Dyke, you know, your sense of what's happening and then seeing on video versus what actually happened, right, there can be some differences.
And the prosecutors replayed that video and asked Van Dyke, you know, if you saw McDonald raising the knife while watching that video. And he answered, no, I didn't. But then during his testimony, he said, yeah, that he was going up to the side, raising the knife toward him. And the reason why he fired so many shots, because, again, I don't even think he would be charged with anything had he not fired off 16 rounds. If he had just fired off two shots, I don't even think he'd be charged with anything. But the fact that it was 16 shots, that's because he was on PCP. And when you're on PCP, your muscles are still moving around even after you've been shot.
Well,
I mean, it's,
yeah,
there's properties to that drug that are different. You think you're invincible and you could fly off bridges and all this stuff.
I don't know if he would have just fired one or two shots and killed McDonald just the same. Would he have been charged? Probably. Premeditated rap songs about it. I don't know about that. But he would have been charged because this is fundamentally a judgment call. And the belief from those who believe Van Dyke should be convicted is that he used deadly force when it was not necessary because McDonald didn't pose a threat to him in that moment. And so it's not reasonable for him to have opened fire at all, much less 16 times. But what you point out about McDonald's state is relevant to the jury, and this is why the defense put on a pharmacology expert who explained what 54 nanograms in somebody's system can do, and the description was that gives you a feeling of invincibility. And so there was testimony offered on behalf of Van Dyke again and the defense that suggested that the reason he kept shooting is because McDonald could have been struck as many as 10 times before he went down.
Right.
And so he was shooting because perhaps, and I didn't hear this testimony from him, perhaps he thought he was missing or he didn't see McDonald go down or some combination of the two, and thus the threat removed or some combination of the two. That's the testimony. That's the argument that's being made by the defense. And I'm wondering if there doesn't seem to have been any much exploration, including by the prosecution, but I haven't watched every waking minute of this, so maybe I missed it, of this question that I still have, which is explain, give some rationale for the choice that you made that your fellow officers on the scene did not. I'd like to hear that question answered. And I really haven't heard a particularly comprehensive answer to that question.
Well, they did have a few police officers that testified. One said that she had responded earlier to Laquan McDonald hit robbing that store. And she said that she thought he had a gun and she feared for her life.
So that was pretty poignant testimony. And then he slashed, that's the police officer's vehicle that the tire was slashed.
And yeah, then, no, I know. But you? I mean, but on the scene in that moment,
right?
He wasn't the only officer there. He made a decision the others didn't make. And by the way, just in terms of people's interactions with Laquan McDonald that night, not just police officers, the West Side resident, the woman who called 911, and she sort of like tried to soft pedal what she initially said, but her initial statement and why she called 911 was that Laquan McDonald scared her. He wanted to borrow her car or something, and she wasn't so keen on that idea. And however that interaction went, it was enough to frighten her into calling 911.
And I am so sick of the picture that they're showing of his eighth grade graduation with his missing tooth. That's Laquan McDonald 12 years ago. And by the way, his mom, who received the $5 million judgment, was supposed to testify in this trial. They couldn't find her. She got the money, and she was gone, whereas they should have given that money to the woman who raised him, and that was his foster mom.
Well, okay, those are
sort of it's an ancillary issue, Your Honor, but I just have to get that off my chest because it's so sick. They rushed to give this family money to hush them up and to make them be quiet. Mom's quiet. Mom, they can't find mom. And the only relative they can find is a great uncle who is a pastor who might have ulterior motives to coming forward every day and talk to the media.
What about that? What about the media's coverage of this and specifically propagandizing Laquan McDonald with that graduation picture that is, I mean, that doesn't look anything like the Laquan McDonald that Jason Van Dyke confronted on the street that night. And also, look, I'm not saying that he should have been killed, but this is not the story of an honor student who is turning his life around.
This is a high school dropout who has plenty of run-ins with the law. And if they're going to do that, show those pictures, they should show Jason Van Dyke his police officer picture rather than his mugshot.
I think actually all criminals, this is my new idea.
This is brilliant. Everybody listen up.
For the D.C. Chicago press corps, since they're sort of always flacking for the accused, regardless of the merits, sometimes it's warranted, sometimes it's not. They're always doing it. They make no distinction. Anybody accused of a heinous crime that is a liberal, and so this would go to like the sexual predators too, like Harvey Weinstein and all the Charlie Rose, all the Matt Lauer, all the Hollywood types, the media types, all the men of the left, in addition to just your garden variety street criminal, pictures of them as toddlers.
Oh, the baby picture?
Yeah, just baby picture.
How about the newborn photo that the hospitals give? Maybe take it that old school, like when they're a day old,
right?
Or a few hours.
She being when you're being coddled by swaddled by your mom. Yeah, that's what
The little hat that says Northwestern.
Yeah, from now on, the Harvey Weinstein, as we follow Harvey Weinstein's legal travails. Yeah. I want Harvey Weinstein charged with rape, and I want to see a baby picture. Why not?
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line.
Jim in Rogers Park.
Hi. You were asking about why did Van Dyke shoot and the other cops didn't shoot. Didn't he just testify that McDonald lunged at his left shoulder with the knife?
Yeah.
So if McDonald's coming at him, that's the reason why he shot and the other ones didn't shoot.
Okay.
And on the other topic that you just dropped off of that I've been trying to tell you guys for 3 days is Grassley is a poster boy for age limits, not term limits. The guy cannot read the opening statement, let alone control what happened during the course of those hearings.
They're all old up there. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. What was the median age of those Senate Judiciary Committee?
Like 130.
Okay. That's what I thought.
I mean, Di-Fi next to her.
Well, she's had some work done, so she looks a little younger than.
Yeah, you're
she's
right.
She's gorgeous.
She doesn't look. I mean, she's 85, but I mean, I wouldn't. She doesn't look a day over 83.
Exactly.
Yeah, the work is good.
She's 85.
And then she descends back into her crypt. George in Libertyville.
Yeah, hey, guys. You know, what the media should be saying is, and then prosecution is, well, you might have needed to kill him, but did you need to kill him that bad? You know, these guys on PCP are like superhuman strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're more upset. Did you have to shoot the guy 16 times versus 3? Either way, he's dead.
Well, yeah.
And as far as Dianne Feinstein, All she needs a hood, and then she'd be the Grim Reaper in a couple weeks for Halloween.
Thanks for the call, George. I don't know what she's going for Halloween.
Well, if you see a real picture of what Laquan McDonald looks like, he's more of a built man, a lot taller.
Well, yeah,
a lot different than the eighth grade graduation picture.
Right. Well, because he grew up.
He went through puberty. Yeah. That picture is a prepubescent photo. Arg. Where's his mom?
I'm telling you, go with the toddler pictures.
Mom.
This little boy on a tricycle has been charged with first degree murder. Max on the Edens. Hey, Max.
Max.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Bad reception here.
Okay.
I was just saying that this is an Occam's razor situation. But the simplest explanation is that Van Dyke was just, I want to get out of here. Bam, 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 bam.
You think?
Well, he wants to get out with his life.
Hello.
Yeah, you mean you think he was a.
My bad.
Hello. Okay. All right, Max. Sorry. We got the Occam's razor argument. So the ice.
You used that this morning to shave with, right?
Yeah. So it's made by Gillette.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. The idea that I assume Max means like he was so afraid he just opened fire rather than. Well
clearly
I
he
know.
Feared for his life. I mean, and he said in testimony that he has gotten out his gun 20 other times while he's been on the job and never had to use it because the threat of the weapon was enough to stop the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it wasn't because he was still going in all bug-eyed and it was dark out and he was, you know, he just thought his life was in jeopardy.
Right. And but remember, it's a reasonable man standard, reasonable person standard. You know, did he have a reasonable fear for his life? And so this is why his perception and whether or not that's believable that Laquan McDonald was coming at him, that Laquan McDonald was lifting his hand with the knife in a threatening fashion, essentially, you know, is that reasonable based on the video evidence? That's for a jury to decide.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. Nothing matters in this Brett Kavanaugh mess except the truth. That's all that matters. We'll talk about it when Freedom returns at 5.
Get this party started. Kavanaugh's got the keg. Not since Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicella have two people had more beach friends than Kavanaugh and Ford.
Well, what they did, I mean, in June of 1983, Brett Kavanaugh wrote a 2-page letter. It was kind of an instruction sheet to his 7 buddies because they rented out this beachfront condo in Maryland. And
Ocean City, don't you know?
Yeah, and had some instructions like, hey, the money must be in cash. One of you has to grab the bull by the horns and take charge. We must supply our own towels, sheets, pillowcases, blankets. It was just an instruction sheet because he was going to be in Ireland until Sunday night. So somebody had to take charge.
This is so riveting.
Innocuous. I mean, it's so.
Well, there is. But of course, there's some phraseology in there that the press corps is picking up to impugn the integrity of Kavanaugh as it pertains to his drinking mainly. But Kavanaugh wrote they were, quote unquote, prolific pukers. Told his guests to warn the neighbors to go about 30 miles away. I think we are unanimous that any girls we can beg to stay there are welcomed with open ... The danger of eviction is great, and that would suck because of the money and because this week has big potential.
He's just getting his drink on, getting his ladies on. I mean, come on, guys. We guys can't be guys anymore. Girls love these parties. We do.
I don't know. I've never been to one.
Well, I had a lot of parties. I shouldn't. Oh,
of course. Well, here we go. All right.
Well, I live behind a forest reserve, so we'd bring in a lot of kegs. And any Mile Prospect police officer
then you do,
who
like
is
human
benefited
sacrifices.
From one of my parties because they would always steal the beer that we bought and put it in the back trunk of their car and say, this is great because we got a Bears game to watch tomorrow. Like, thanks a lot. But anyway, so I'd leave instructions of, you know, if the party gets too big, we kick out sophomores first, then juniors. And I'd leave instruction. That's pretty much what he was doing.
Were you and your cohorts prolific pukers?
No, we didn't. No. We're varsity members. We didn't. I don't know. We are more controlled. We didn't really.
Oh, it was like Dead Poets Society. You're reciting Coleridge to each other.
We're a little more refined.
Yeah, of course. No, of course. Of course. So that's Kavanaugh. And then it was also like the intersection of Beach Party and Revenge of the Exes, which, you know, makes for a delicious beach party. It was all the talk. Julie Swetnick, a couple ex-boyfriends of Julie Swetnick came forward and said that she has a problem telling the truth. And also... psychological problems, and also she likes to engage in sexual intercourse with more than one male partner at the same time.
Yeah, and she told her ex-boyfriend, who's a weatherman, an ex-weatherman in D.C., that that she learned about that in high school, and she really enjoyed it, liked it. That's why she went back 10 times to different parties.
We have some audio of Julie Swetnick from that time period.
Wow. Hello. Yeah. I'm here for the gangbang.
I don't know if that was, I don't know if that was Julie Swetnick's house. It could have been, though. Just like it could have been Brett Kavanaugh.
We shouldn't laugh because her ex-boyfriend came forward and he filed a restraining order against her because she threatened to kill him.
Yeah, this is Richard.
Minor details.
Vinici, who was on with Laura Ingraham yesterday, and he decided, said he had to come forward because it's a civic duty to come forward because... she scares the hell out of him.
Right after I broke up with her, she basically called me many times. And at one point, she basically said, you will never, ever see your unborn child alive. And I wanted, you know, I'm just going to go over there. I'm going to kill you guys.
She said she was going to kill you?
Yes. And that really scared me a little bit.
Yeah, I could see where that would get your attention.
Little red flag for the future.
Well, sure. He also said that she never mentioned any of this business about being sexually assaulted.
Never, never once she mentioned that to me. And we used to talk about it, just about everything, and she never once mentioned that at all. She was exaggerating everything. If anybody knows Julie and the person, I mean, I know because I live with her. And everything that came out of her mouth was just exaggerations. And she never mentioned that to me at all. And it's something that I was very surprised to hear this. I was very surprised to actually see her making these accusations because she had never, ever mentioned that to me at all. She is, if you ask me personally if I believe her, I don't believe her. Personally, I don't believe her. I really don't believe her. No one knows Julie Swetnick better than me. And, he can say anything he wants. But the facts are that I know, and that's what I came here to tell the truth. I mean, I know how she is.
And Lisa, yeah, she always bragged about all these litigation she was in. Remember, this is a former runway model. That's what she alleged in one lawsuit, because she fell in the D.C. transit and sued them for $420,000 because it affected her modeling career. Her modeling? Model? He said she always had to be the center of attention, and so when he saw her, he's like, oh, that's so typical of her to... insert herself like this.
There's something else Mr. Vinici said that is salacious and outlandish. And since we're all in one long-running Maury Povich show, we'll
back
play
in two
it.
And two. We'll see who the father is.
Because it's as relevant as Julie Swetnick's allegations, I suppose. Might have been Brett Kavanaugh. I was assaulted. These parties happened. It might have. Brett Kavanaugh may have been involved. Alan Dershowitz said, if Julie Swetnick lied, she should be tried for perjury and sent to prison. You think there should be consequences if people are telling stories in this context with so much at stake? I agree with him.
Well, the boat guy who said Kavanaugh gangbanged somebody on a docked boat in Newport, Rhode Island, he's getting sued.
He's been referred by Grassley for criminal prosecution. He has been, yeah.
I don't know. That was for any minor issues that we had, she will always get into my face. And the first time I experienced that, it was like, oh, my God, this is just, this is incredible. She will get right in my face and she will say, hit me. Hit me, Richard, hit me.
Hit me, Richard, hit me.
He alleges that every minor argument they got into, she would say, get up in his face, as you just heard him say, hit me like she wanted to be hit. Okay.
What about Blase Ford's ex?
What about him? Diane, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, there's a sworn testimony from Blase Ford's adult six-year boyfriend.
Yeah.
And he says she never once said that there was a problem with confined spaces, no report of any sexual attack ever, and also that a year after they were no longer living together, she was still using his credit card, and at first she said, no, no, it wasn't me. And then when he said, I'm going to fraud prevention or protection, she said, oh, it was me. And he finally broke up with her. This is now when she had already moved to Hawaii. They were still going out, even though he was still in California, when he found that she was still going out with other guys.
Yes.
So why isn't that all over the media? Thank you.
Yeah, well, she was stepping out on him. And she used his credit card, ran up like $600 plus.
She, the ex-boyfriend, Ford's ex-boyfriend, also dismisses the idea she has a fear of flying. And he said, and this is particularly relevant because this is black and white. Mitchell asked Ford, did you ever prepare anybody for a polygraph exam? No. That was her testimony. He says, I witnessed Dr. Ford help Monica McLean prepare for a potential polygraph exam. Ford, quote, explained in detail what to expect, how polygraphs worked, and helped her become familiar and less nervous about the exam using her background in psychology, this according to her ex-boyfriend. Dennis in Crystal Lake.
Amy, if you ever wanted to know why I use the word broads, this is it. And anyways, these broads, if they want to see some gang, bangs, they should have hung around us in the Navy for 21 years.
What does that have to do with girls? Okay, thanks for the call, Dennis. Thank you very much.
The elephant lawn.
Oh, gosh. Dennis.
Broads, these broads. Well, also, too, you know, she lived in a 500-square-foot, Blase Ford lived in a 500-square-foot place with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Never needed a second door, never mentioned, never had panic attacks, nothing.
I'm going to offer the definitive word on this whole matter.
Yeah.
I'm going to end this discussion right now.
Yeah?
Because Alyssa Milano has weighed in.
Oh, the Alyssa Milano, who's friends with Dianne Feinstein.
Because Judith Light was unavailable. Christine Blasey Ford is to be believed, and I believe she is. If Christine Blasey Ford is to be believed, and I believe she is, Brett Kavanaugh is a sexual predator. That's a sentence that doesn't even make sense. This is at CNN.com. If any number of women are to be believed, and I believe they are, this isn't English. This is like reading a Kevin McCarthy speech. If any number of women are to be believed, and I believe they are, Donald Trump is a sexual predator. Kavanaugh and Trump need to be blah, blah, blah. This is the good part, though. Until we root out the institutionalization of sexual violence and child abuse in our government, too many will continue to be victims, some in our name, under the false premise of protecting our border. Then she goes off on this tangent about
our border.
Yeah, border security and unaccompanied minor children and so forth.
She should stick to acting.
No, she really shouldn't.
And leave the heavy lifting to intellectuals.
But I would ask if I could query Alyssa Milano.
Yeah, what would you ask, Dan? And why?
Until we root out the institutionalization of sexual violence and child abuse in our government. So she's opposed to that. Great. So now I finally have an ally with respect to the Chicago public school system. Frank in Villa Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Said on the web or one of the media outlets that this Swetnick actually had as representation the attorney Katz. Now, Katz is the attorney that's taking care of the Blasey case. Well, isn't that quite a coincidence?
Wait, what was that?
That Katz had represented Julie Swetnick in a case.
In one of her many lawsuits that the woman has filed over the year.
Well,
she's a professional at it. Can look at her history.
Well, that is an interesting coincidence. I mean, but it still pales in comparison, as far as I'm concerned, to Dianne Feinstein referring Katz to Blase Ford to be her legal representation. At the same time, she was withholding all of this information from the rest of the committee. I find that particularly problematic. Thanks for the call, Frank.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson,
on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Interesting developments in the Kavanaugh saga over the last 24 hours, including yesterday's suggestion that the FBI investigation could be wrapped up as soon as today. And then there's the debate about whether or not to make the FBI report publicly available in total, publicly available in part, not publicly available at all. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you want to see whatever the FBI cobbles together, or are you going to trust what you can expect will be competing interpretations of whatever information they provide members of the Senate?
I'm going to be, well, that's the thing. It's not going to be made public, so we're not going to really know unless it's leaked by members of the Judiciary Committee what
A sitting member of the Senate Judiciary Committee,
yes.
A United States senator, would never leak something that was given to her in confidentiality.
Never. Oh, never.
Hey, did any of you, did anybody on my staff leak this? No? No, they said no. Okay, well, that case closed.
But my point of contention is this whole thing is centered and began because of Christine Blasey Ford, and why the FBI is not interviewing her, I don't understand.
Well, I understand it.
Well, explain it to me, because it makes no sense. And I'm going to have to fight my liberal friends on this for God knows how long, and I don't want to do that.
No,
so why can't they just talk to
you
her?
You don't have to do it. There's another way out of that.
And her attorneys are not happy. They're imploring the FBI to speak to their client, demanding that they do it.
There's a way out of that problem you have with the liberal friends.
What's that?
Discard them. No. So that's one way. In terms of why not put the FBI on her, well, number one, the White House's position is interview whoever you want.
Right, and they've interviewed PJ. They haven't interviewed Squeegee.
Squee.
Yeah. No, but seriously, they've interviewed Ludington, his Yale classmate, Deborah Ramirez, Mark Judge, Ludington, and I don't even know, have they even talked to Kavanaugh?
So, yeah. Okay. So the reason, I mean, there's reason that Republicans would not be cheerleading the FBI to talk to Blasey Ford is because of what Lindsey Graham said on Hannity last night. It's like, look, I don't want to, she doesn't need to go through the ringer again. I think she's a victim in this whole situation too. I think she's been manipulated by Senate Democrats. This is what Lindsey Graham essentially suggested. And so, you know, we've got her testimony on the record. We don't need to hear from her again. Now, an argument could be made. Hey, if her attorneys want her to be interviewed by the FBI, if they're raring for it, then okay, we'll happy to accede to your wishes. And by the way, now we're going to ask you about what your ex-boyfriend said on the record about this and about that during your 6 years or however long it was during the 90s together. That seems to contradict what you said. Were you honest? Were you telling the truth when you told Rachel Mitchell that you never helped prepare anybody for a polygraph? Or is your ex-boyfriend correct that you did prepare this specific person who he names for a polygraph examination? Things like that that go to her credibility as well as her veracity under oath, which is even more dangerous. So if I were her attorneys, I mean, it's one thing to take that public position. I don't know that I would I don't know that they would be representing the best interests of their clients by demanding another FBI conversation.
Yeah, and everything, honestly, when you look at her ex-boyfriend's account of their relationship, 7 years they were together, never was claustrophobic, never demanded a second door, never had a fear of flying. So, but I'm just saying, if you're going to have a full investigation, maybe are there any other questions that weren't asked at the judicial hearing that you'd like to be asked? Yes. About her friend who doesn't recall even going to a party.
These FBI background investigations, not normally made public, but this is not a normal confirmation hearing. And I think that some at least redacted version is going to need to be made public because, as I said, you're going to get competing versions of what's in that background investigation. And, you know, frankly, there is nobody believes anybody. And, but by the way, including the FBI because of what's happened there over the last 18 months. But Lindsey Graham had an interesting point, too, in terms of the potential boomerang effect of Democrats on Democrats because of this whole sordid story. Lindsey Graham saying Democrats have done something the Republicans couldn't. Unite Republicans.
Whether you're a Trump Republican, a Libertarian, Vegetarian, McCain Republican, Romney Republican, Bush Republican, you're mad as hell because we're all united that this is unfair. What they're doing to this good, decent man cannot stand. So the Republican of the year will be a Democrat, not a Republican. You've been able to do something, my friends on the other side, I could never do. Unite this party.
Yeah, and he suggests that any red state Democrat that votes against Kavanaugh, he or she gone.
What about these red state Democrats?
I think they're toast.
Ooh. All of them.
All of them.
All of them politically.
That vote, they, anybody votes.
Well, the only
no,
two
toast.
That are open seemingly to even.
No, they're toast if they vote no. And they should be. President Trump won these states promising to nominate conservative judges well qualified. This is a Bush guy. He worked for the Bush White House. He's as mainstream as you can get. He's been on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals for 12 years. Glowing assessments of his credibility, his integrity before this hearing. Now, if you're going to reward people for destroying his life by questioning his temperament, then you're setting in motion the destruction of the judiciary. To any Republican who wants to question Kavanaugh's temperament, what you're doing is rewarding the people who have put him in this box.
Yeah, it's a really important point that Graham makes. I want to get back to, but I wanted to also share what he had to say about his colleagues, Murkowski and Collins, and where he thinks they are.
Yeah, let's let the people decide whether or not their senator was right in voting no against this good man. Corker made an observation that we've got the votes, and here's what I would say to Bob. I think you're right, but we've got to wait on the FBI report. Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins really wanted the FBI to validate the committee's work. They're just about done. I'm confident both of them, if there's no change, if the FBI learns nothing new about the Ford allegation or legitimacy to Ramirez, that they're going to vote for Kavanaugh because we've done everything within reason. And I hope Jeff Flake will also, because he voted yes in committee. And now he's talking about temperament and yearbook entries.
Yeah, listen to yourself. He goes on to say, talking about yearbook entries, but on temperament.
Yeah.
This argument that Flake and others are now bringing up because they have to bootstrap a new argument. Every argument that they make gets shot down or they cannot corroborate. So now they're down to temperament and they're going back and relitigating Brett Kavanaugh being upset that clearly in his mind he's been wrongly accused of horrendous things and having sharp exchanges with
Senate members.
Yeah, with members of the Senate. I mean, good grief. I thought he was restrained considering the backgrounds of some of these senators. But this whole temperament argument is a real red herring that should be explored. And anybody advancing it should be challenged, as Lindsey Graham is challenging Flake.
After listening to Flake last night, I mean, I don't know where he's going on this. He seems to be undecided, but yet he seems to be leaning toward a no vote.
I was very troubled by the tone of the remarks. The initial defense that that Judge Kavanaugh gave was something like I told my wife, I hope that I would sound that indignant if I were if I felt that I was unjustly, you know, maligned. But then it went on, and the interaction with the members was sharp and partisan, and that concerns me. And I tell myself, you give a little leeway because of what he's been through. But on the other hand, we can't have this on the court. We simply can't.
Oh, yeah, we can't.
And then his wife said to him, hey, Jeff, why don't you take your nuts out of Chris Coons's purse?
They're making the rounds together on TV, and it just looks so goofy.
Yeah. Well, here's this is the reasoned argument, temperament. Oh man, you know, we have to keep up this appearance, right? We have to continue to perpetrate this fraud. That's what Jeff Flake is saying, because he's a fraud. That's what he's become, I'm sorry to say, but that's what he's become. When he says, I wouldn't have done what I did if I was running for re-election, that says, if I was running for re-election, I wouldn't do the right thing, because he's saying he's doing the right thing here. So which is it? just shows you exactly the nature of what this guy's character has become. It's a sad story and a cautionary tale about swamp fever. But that the idea, it's very much like this Christine Fair, just Georgetown professor, who, you know, all men should be castrated and their family jewels fed to pigs. White men and, you know, Republicans and all the profanity. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. And Georgetown University's response to Christine Fair was, we believe in her right to free speech, but we still demand that she keep her classroom free of bias. I mean, it's so absurd. But the whole idea is keep up the appearance, keep up the facade, continue to perpetrate the fraud. And this is the whole temperament argument. It's perpetrating a fraud. Let me give you another example. Benjamin Wittes, who is a scholar at the Brookings Institute, writes this piece in The Atlantic. I know Brett Kavanaugh, but I wouldn't confirm him. I write these words with no pleasure, with deep sadness. I have no hostility or particular fear of conservative jurisprudence. I have a long relationship with Kavanaugh. I've always liked him, admired his career on the D.C. circuit, spoken warmly about him, published him, vouched publicly for his character more than once, and taken a fair bit of heat for doing so. And he goes on, despite all of that, if I were centered, I would vote against Kavanaugh's confirmation. I would do it both because of Ford's testimony and because of Kavanaugh's. And he goes on to say he finds Kavanaugh less credible than Ford. But here's the kicker. Real reason, I couldn't do it. I would vote no if I was a senator, says this, you know, scholar at a left-leaning think tank, the Brookings Institute. I cannot condone the partisanship, which was raw, undisguised, naked, conspiratorial, from someone who asked for the public faith as a dispassionate and impartial judicial actor. His performance was wholly consistent with the conduct we should expect from a member of the judiciary. Can't condone the partisanship. We have to keep up appearances. Continue to snowball people. Because Ruth Bader Ginsburg's open partisanship, not a problem. Benjamin Wittes hasn't taken the time to pen a piece calling for Ruth Bader Ginsburg's impeachment because she was cheerleading for Hillary Clinton and denigrating Donald Trump as just one example of her public partisanship, even though, according to Wittes, someone who asked for public faith as a dispassionate and impartial judicial actor. Well, that's not Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for example. Where are the applications of this standard to her from Jeff Flake or Benjamin Wittes or anybody else? It's a scam. It's a scam, just like it is Jeff Flake and Chris Coons doing their bosom buddies routine. Just like it is when you hear the siren song of bipartisanship compromise from these tax eaters and grifters in Springfield. It's a scam. And I'm glad, frankly, and shocked. I think it's a narrow instance here. I don't know that he's going to make the rest of his career out of doing this. But it's been a pleasant surprise to see Lindsey Graham make some of these arguments, at least in defense of Kavanaugh. I wish he would do it with more frequency, and so would his colleagues. Verlon on the South Side.
Man, I hope I can get this in. But Amy, I've been listening to you all morning saying that Donald Trump shouldn't be the messenger for Brett Kavanaugh's case. Where else is he going to go to clear his name? Nobody else is standing up for him to clear his name except for Lindsey Graham. Look, I want you to think about Clarence Thomas. Yeah, he got confirmed, but nobody took up for him. Now, I want you to think about that. That's the reason why it lingered for as many years as it did. Donald Trump has the biggest microphone in America, and he's going on the limb to clear this man's name. That's why I love him. I want you to think about Brett Kavanaugh's wife. When she goes to her soirees around her social groups, they're going to point the finger at her just like they did Clarence Thomas's wife. That hurts. Well, think about the kids when they're growing up going to school. Kids are cruel. They're going to pick with his kids. Okay, the other kids are going to pick with his kids because of what his father's going through. Kavanaugh's not carrying his burden alone, and I'm going to go on the limb and say something else. I'm going to say something that nobody else wants to say. Those women are liars. All three of them are liars. And I'm going to tell you something. They may have been raped. All of them may have been raped. But these rape victims, they have this groupthink. They're using Kavanaugh as a vessel to express their pain. It's not Kavanaugh. It's not one individual man. It's all men, as far as they're concerned, are bad or potentially bad. So I want you to think about that. Donald Trump is a fighter. That's why I love him, and he's fighting for Kavanaugh, and he's the only one that can probably help Kavanaugh clear his name.
All right, Verlon, thanks for the call.
I think he was passionate about that.
Yeah, he's given you a lot to think about. Here's what I would one. I mean, there's a lot of what he said, but a lot to what he said. One thing, though, in terms of like Trump fighting for Kavanaugh and who else is going to fight for him, mm-hmm. it's not the issue is not about Trump fighting for Kavanaugh. He should. He's Trump's nominee. He should fight for him, and it's the honorable thing to do based on the evidence in hand. It's how he fights for him. That's what we were talking about. That's what you were talking about earlier. It's not that you're rallying to the defense. You've been rallying to the defense of Brett Kavanaugh. Yeah. It's just how he did it. Is it more counterproductive than productive?
Yeah, and it doesn't help, I think, with wishy-washy Republicans who want to see this FBI report and then some moderate Democrats. And it doesn't help perpetuate the Republican Party. I think this might hurt during the midterms when he comes out and attacks a woman who most people think has already been victimized.
Well, right, and if you agree with what Lindsey Graham said, if you agree with his assessment of the political landscape right now and that this is boomerang in Democrats, then what's the old saw in politics? If your opponent is busy destroying themselves, don't interrupt. Bob in Waukegan.
Yeah, I think Lindsey Graham should take Monica Crowley's piece in The Hill this morning and read it before they even vote on the confirmation for Kavanaugh, because it will put all the Democrats in their place. But we're in a civil war, and the other side is uncivil, so it's not going to make any difference. They have no shame. The lady said that she had one beer. Well, it was the punch that was spiked. It wasn't the beer. So why can't she remember anything when she had one beer? Because the beer was not spiked.
I think you're conflating parties. The punch spike, the alleged spiked punch, was the testimony or the statements of Julie Swetnick. Ford never testified to anything about spiked punch, as far as I'm concerned. As far as I know, I should say. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
She just said one beer at the party, and then it was Swetnick who said the
thing about the punch.
Yeah.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. President Trump at a rally in MISSISSIPPI yesterday.
It's so cute when you do that.
I know. It's how I remember, learn how to spell Mississippi.
MISSISSIPPI.
Just like how Coach learned geography and Cheers. Remember? Oh.
Refresh my memory.
Albania, you border on the Adriatic. You know, you got to come up with mnemonics like that.
Near Greece.
Well, that's a little off key. Okay. All right. So President Trump, of course, the big takeaway from the D.C. press corps is President Trump mocking Blasey Ford, her lack of details, her emphasis on having one beer. But there's something else that he said at the rally that we're going to take up here, get your reactions. This is it.
What's happening now? They had gang rape.
You have gang rape?
Many times. Well, that turned out to be false. So many different charges. Guilty until proven innocent. That's very dangerous for our country.
Guilty until proven innocent, very dangerous for our country, not just in the court of law, but the court of public opinion. Shame mob that we've talked about that is no longer confined to college campuses. I don't know if you've noticed, but if you didn't until now, which you should have, you certainly do now. So the question is this a dangerous time in our country, particularly, I mean, not to play the role of the victim here, but this is what people are discussing. Take your opinions on it, particularly if you're a man in your interactions with women in the workplace and generally. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Do you worry that your husband, your brother, your
sons
could be targeted?
Well, Don Jr. started this. He had given an interview outside one of his log cabins he was hunting at. And mentioned, you know, that he's more worried for his sons than his daughter.
Was Kimberly there?
Oh, you know what? I didn't see her in the background. I didn't see her. But
But he was asked that, President Trump was asked that same question yesterday.
Very scary time for young men in America when you can be guilty of something that you may not be guilty of. You could be somebody that was perfect your entire life, and somebody could accuse you of something. But in this realm, you are truly guilty until proven innocent.
And this is not to say, because I can hear the other side saying, well, oh, well, you want to talk about a dangerous time. What about women who are assaulted? What about women who aren't believed? What about women who are intimidated into staying silent in the face of wrongdoing that that they've suffered? Well, right. That's not right either. But the question isn't, the patriarchy argument or whether men should be above reproach. The question is sort of the standard of analysis. Sort of.
There's no due process for men.
Well,
as my son said, there's two choices for gender choice: feminist or rapist.
There's due process in a court of law. The question is, should it apply in the court of public opinion? Should are you afraid? Because frankly, criminal penalties, in some respects, could be less severe than the cultural penalties that you suffer. Your career can be ended like that over an allegation.
In a hot second, you'll be off a board. In a hot second, you could lose your job. In a hot second, you could be kicked off coaching. I mean, somebody makes one allegation against you. There's no, again,
I mean,
the court of public opinion, you are screwed.
You're seeing it, Brett Kavanaugh, 12 years in the D.C. Court of Appeals.
He can't take coaches or can't.
His Harvard law class has been canceled. Yeah. He doesn't think he'll be able to coach again. There are people actually suggesting he shouldn't be able to coach girls again. I mean, this is the level this is going to, as we've discussed in previous shows. So, you know, is that a real thing? Do you really fear that your husband could be wrongly accused in a workplace setting, or your children, your sons, in a school setting? Is that a real fear that you have as someone with sons?
Yes. What about your fictitious children? What do you tell them?
I don't have any fear.
They don't know fear.
They color inside the lines.
So we've got homecoming dance coming up, and Peyton asked somebody to go, and he won't tell me her name because he doesn't want me to know. But was wondering, well, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and I, at this point in time, like, don't touch her. maybe you can hold hands or slow dance, but I'm just so worried that if one allegation is lobbied against him, that it will ruin his high school career.
I have got somebody who could help. It's the classic story of a porn star with a heart of gold, like Stormy Daniels. Tasha Rain. This wonderful think piece in the Daily Beast leftist outlet. Tasha Rain, the porn star teaching frat boys about consent.
Oh, well, that's a new kind of summer camp.
Yeah.
Mom, can I go for 2 weeks instead of one? Mom!
Yeah. So I don't know when she has availability.
Is this before?
But I'll pass on the...
Before initiation? After pledging? Okay.
Mm-hmm. They seem to want to learn, Miss Rain says. Maybe they act differently with a few beers in them, so I make sure to let them know that consent means you or your partner can't be blacked out or even drunk.
Okay.
That proves to be the most challenging part of the conversation. There are many queries like, what if the girl makes it up that I did something to her?
That is
when I present them with their fear versus reality. Why on earth would a woman want to deal with the public humiliation that follows? What is her reward? So Tasha Rain has clearly been reading from... Miss Katz and the other leftists who are Senator Harris and others who are suggesting that no one would lie, even if they're no one would lie for benefits because there could be some downsides. When in point of fact, we've seen this happen on any number of high profile cases. People are willing to make up stories or they suffer from some kind of disorder or they've convinced themselves of something that isn't true innocently enough.
It's so true. It's
like you with a dead body in your backyard.
No, if you say something enough and you lie to yourself enough, you eventually believe the story.
Right.
It is so true, and it is proven time and time again.
Right. So
and don't go back to the dead body in my backyard.
So there, well, Well, is it
that dead body? The body in my backyard, obviously. No, I don't know. It could. Yeah, and I heard yesterday. Excuse me for going off on.
Yeah, no, please.
It might be some weapons that are buried. Some weapons that were used in a crime that were buried in the backyard.
Weapons you buried.
First of all, the crime you committed against the victim. I didn't commit any crime. And there, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm just a victim of circumstances.
Why don't you do it? Then fine. Why don't you, let's go, let's have the site excavated and let's see what's there.
Saturday might be excavation day.
All right.
Because I have some time on my hands. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'll send my detective friends over.
Just in time for Halloween.
Don't spoil the crime scene.
The Marshfield monster comes to life!
So, with respect to this, though, the what is her reward?
Yes.
And I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, if a porn star can't offer young men better advice than members of the U.S. Senate, then we're really in a bad place. Art in McHenry, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. Yeah, what's going on with Kavanaugh and these false accusations, him being guilty by the view of the public, I won't even tip women more than what's required for my order at restaurants now. I won't even be left alone with a woman. I'm avoiding women at all costs,
all right,
except for my wife.
All right, Mr. Pink.
What is the safest thing we could do?
What does your wife think about skimping out on the waitresses?
You know, I left my wife, and my daughter, my 22-year-old daughter, let them make their own opinion, and they both felt like she was lying from the word go.
No,
her,
I mean about...
Her tears were fake.
No. I mean about tipping.
I'm sorry.
I mean, yeah, your Steve Buscemi routine.
My wife, she's the one that's got me into tipping big, because we always felt like, you know, it's to help them out, you know? I mean, they can use us a little extra money, so we always felt like it was nice of us to help to tip bigger. But now with what's going on, I won't tip anybody big except for the male waiters from now on. Right. Just because I don't want to have them coming back and saying, oh, he gave me a big tip and was trying to get my number, or who knows what they could come out and say nowadays.
All right, thanks for the call, Art. Oh. What do you think the men are going to think when you start tipping them big? You know what I'm saying, Art?
It goes both ways, Art. Be careful out there. It's dangerous.
I get off at 5. Greg on the south side.
Hello. How you doing?
Hey.
Hi.
All right, Greg.
You're on.
Hello?
Speaketh. Yes, you're on.
Hey, love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The three women, if they went to the same parties, or maybe not the same party, but the parties, shouldn't they have bumped into each other, saw each other, know each other? They're having these parties every weekend. Wouldn't they have bumped into each other? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's nothing about them all knowing one another or having any dealings with each other. How big could that community be? How big could that high school be? How many parties could there have been where they would not have seen each other? It's happening every weekend, so they say.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Greg. I mean, it's a fair point. It's like these circles, and then you have... Here, go talk to these people. And then one of these people says of Julie Swetnick, I don't know who Julie Swetnick is. I mean, if you would level up somebody to corroborate your story or your attendance 100%. At a party, and one of the four says, I don't know who she is, that's pretty damning, I got to say.
Yeah. And then in case of Blase Ford, the woman that she was with, who's Bob Beckel's ex-wife, knows. I mean, that was her friend. She said, we didn't go to a party, and I never met Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
That's a problem. So she was with the wrong
guy. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, it's not necessarily like, you know, a Frankie Avalon, Annette Funicello beach party movie. It's not that close a circle. But, yeah, you heard Kavanaugh talk about the boys' schools and the girls' schools that they would have sock hops with or whatever
sure.
those kids do back in that day.
Sock hops. In the 80s? The 50s, Dan, and the 60s, not the 80s.
The girls would get their poodle skirts on, and they would go up to Inspiration Point.
Wrong decade, Dan. Oh. The sock hop.
Deborah in Arlington Heights.
My brother's career was ruined by a chronic problem female employee that got passed around from work group to work group that he finally had to work with that accused him of sexism. Oh. And so he lost his career as a result of that.
Did he try and fight?
I have a 29-year-old son.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Well, with respect to your brother, did he try and fight it, and the employer wouldn't, or how did it go down?
No, he didn't try to fight it. The employer just let him go. She was going to bring a lawsuit. I think she did bring a lawsuit. Mm. But she had done that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They found
we had a crazy woman at NBC.
I have a 29-year-old son who I'm worried about, like, that is unmarried. And I'm worried, you know, that somebody could come and do the same thing. And it's your word against the other person that, you know, there's no witnesses or... It's frightening.
Thanks for the call, Deborah. Appreciate it.
Because they're guilty just because they're men. Honestly, I feel scared. I'm worried about you, Dan. I'm worried about little Justin over there, Keith, Quinn, Mike Scott. Well, I'm not really worried about Mike Scott. He didn't really put himself in position.
I'd worry about Mike Pence before I worry about Mike Scott. Jim on LSD.
Hi.
Not literally on LSD.
Sometimes I feel that way, but not today.
Yes, right.
The problem is that this political narrative, this ideological warfare, is so powerful that it is blinding people to the core facts that any rational person, I mean, I happen to be a lawyer, in any legal analysis, when somebody puts other people at the scene and they've gone that far and they are as sure that those people were at the scene as they are that the event happened. And then one of those people happens to be their lifelong friend, somebody who has no motive to harm the accuser. And she says, it didn't happen. I wasn't there. I don't know Brett Kavanaugh. You know, I mean, in a rational analysis, that is dispositive. You don't have to believe Brett Kavanaugh. You don't have to believe Christine Ford. You don't have to judge whether somebody's tears look sincere or any of this gushy, you know, stuff. All you need to know is that she's positive that Leland Kaiser was there, and Leland Kaiser says, I never met Brett Kavanaugh. In any rational analysis, that's done. Last comment, I don't know if you guys remember a book a long time ago called The World According to Garp.
Sure.
Yep.
But, it was this insane, or Bonfire of the Vanities even. It's the same idea. It's this notion of this compelling narrative, this like irrational addiction almost, to a cult of victimhood that, in Garp, it was this woman who lost, I guess she cut her own tongue off. And so all these women who followed her cut their tongues off. I mean, it was insane. And I think that kind of hysteria is kind of what's going on right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jim. I don't disagree. I don't know, John Irving and Tom Wolfe, that's some good authors he referenced.
Men, we don't know what we did.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Turning our attention locally here, the trial of former Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke is nearing its conclusion. A big question answered yesterday, would Jason Van Dyke testify?
In his own defense.
In his own defense. He took the stand yesterday and answered that question and a bunch more, including offering up what he saw from Laquan McDonald when he confronted him that night.
His face had no expression. His eyes were just bugging out of his head. He had just these huge white eyes just staring right through me.
And Van Dyke went on to detail what he did as that confrontation proceeded.
I was yelling at him, drop the knife. I yelled, I don't know how many times, but that's all I yelled.
And did he keep advancing toward you?
He never stopped.
So Van Dyke's impression, Laquan McDonald not walking away from him, but advancing towards him. And how did Laquan McDonald react, from according to Van Dyke, to the call to drop the knife?
He waved the knife from his lower right side upwards, across his body, towards my left shoulder.
And when he did that, what did you do, officer?
I shot him.
And that was, I mean, then he was doing it too. He was reenacting how he was down here, down lower right, and ended up upper left. And then he said, you know, he had his gun, and that's when he shot him. And he pulled out his weapon, you know, all of his years of service for Chicago Police Department. He'd pulled out his weapon 20-plus times, and he said, this is the first time I use it because my life was in danger. He felt his life was in danger.
And he also offered up what he thought he was doing versus what the videotape shows him doing. This is always an interesting moment, I thought.
Miss, I thought I was backpedaling that night.
You thought you were backpedaling as you're firing shot after shot after shot?
What I know now and what I thought at that time are two different things.
So where do you come down on the Van Dyke trial as it's nearing its conclusion in terms of being turned over to the jury for a verdict? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Amy?
Yes.
Where do you find yourself after watching much of the testimony, including Van Dyke's yesterday?
It was 90 minutes, and I have to be honest with you, it was painful because you don't take the stand in your own defense. I have covered so many murder trials where the accused never, ever takes a witness stand. I think I'm one for 25. And so the whole time he was up there, it was nerve-wracking. And then during cross-examination, the prosecutors made him watch the video again in a screen that was, you know, right as close as your computer screen is, Dan, to your face, about a foot away, and got his reaction to it. It was gut-wrenching. It was uncomfortable. But I believe him. I truly believe that he thought his life was in danger, and that is why he pulled the trigger. Now, while he shot 16 times, two of those 16 shots, we learned earlier in the testimony from the medical examiner, two of the 16 were the two lethal shots.
So at this point, I mean, based on what you've heard so far in the trial, would you vote to acquit?
Yes. If I was a juror, I would definitely vote to acquit.
I mean, I hate to try these cases in the court of public opinion, but
we have.
Well, and that horse is out of the barn generally.
When I come home from work, Dan, I'll click this on so I can watch the hearing live. I've been doing that for the past 2 weeks. So they're inviting the public to form an opinion by airing this on CLTV, by airing this on everybody's internet or on their web pages, excuse me. You can just watch it.
Well, yeah, there's obviously a lot of public interest. It's understandable. Also, some people tweeting at us some of the signs posted on light posts around the city.
Uh-oh.
Justice for Laquan. If they free the killer cop, the city must stop. This is from Revolution Club Chicago. The murder trial of Jason Van Dyke, the pig who murdered Laquan McDonald with 16 shots, is nearing its final days. When the jury announces a verdict, gather at 71st and Jeffrey. If they free the killer cop, the city must stop. So you can expect if they acquit Van Dyke that there will be protests and perhaps worse. And frankly, maybe if they convict Van Dyke, there'll be celebratory events and maybe worse. Tom in Hobart, Indiana.
Yes, based on the evidence, I would vote to acquit Van Dyke.
Okay, why?
Okay, yeah.
What was it? Did something stick out? Well, did any testimony make you change your mind?
The PCP, what the pharmaceutical experts said, I would go by that. I would definitely vote to acquit Van Dyke based on the evidence that I have heard. That's my analysis.
Thanks for the call, Tom. The pharmacology expert witness did present some interesting information about, we've talked about this, about what that amount of PCP in somebody's system does to them, the feelings they have, the behavior they may exhibit, the feeling of invincibility, the feeling of omnipotence, sort of increasing your pain tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, more testimony along these lines was that McDonald could have taken as many as 10 shots before he went down. And so this could explain why Van Dyke continued shooting, because the threat had not been quelled. And so he could have either thought he was missing, he could have thought well, it wasn't, you know, stopping him, and so he continued. We've talked about the 21-foot rule, too. Somebody with a knife versus somebody with a gun. This is police training and, frankly, self-defense training, too. Mm-hmm. And so the testimony that Van Dyke provided about Laquan McDonald lifting up his arm with a knife like he was potentially going to attack is also relevant. I don't know. I'm still undecided on this. I still don't have a great explanation to the overriding question of why the decision he made versus the decision other officers at the scene made. I know he was in closer proximity to Laquan McDonald.
Right.
But still.
And they had just rolled up on the scene and hearing that he attacked, slashed the tires and hit the windshield of a police vehicle.
And do we know, have we gotten all the details on what Van Dyke knew when he arrived at the scene, what he knew about what McDonald had or had not been doing?
He knew about what he had been doing before he got to the scene.
So that
and there was a neighborhood that all the police officers' family members live in. It's 40th and Pulaski, and a lot of people and families live in the area to the right.
So that informs his decision at the scene. He knows he's coming up on the scene of a suspect who is alleged to have committed violent acts previously. The female resident of the West Side who made the 911 call, she testified that Laquan McDonald scared her. Yet a police officer testified that Laquan McDonald scared her. So, because remember here, we're talking about reasonable person standard based on his training in that moment. Did he have a reasonable fear for his life such that the use of lethal force was acceptable? That's the question.
And we're learning this morning from Father Flager, if Jason Van Dyke is acquitted of murder, they're going to have a massive boycott, Dan. Nobody's going to school. Nobody's going to work. Nobody's going to drive the buses. Nobody's going to clean the hotels. Nobody's going to go to work anywhere, and there's going to be no shopping, says Father Flager, and they're going to shut down an expressway for a day. So they're boycotting Chicago for a day. Huh. Yanking the kids out of school.
So
going to work.
So it'll be another day in Chicago is what you're saying. Yeah, okay. Good stuff. Good stuff, Father Flager. Ralph and Rantoul.
Hey, good morning. I've been on a criminal jury before, and I know that unless you're there and you're hearing all of the testimony on both sides, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stay away from saying whether or not I think he's guilty. But I will say this, though. I think that all of this is really going to discourage more good people from joining the police forces around the country, because if you have to whip out your phone, dial the full 10 digits of the should I shoot or not shoot department, listen to the Girl from Ipanema music playing on hold while you're waiting for a decision maker to come online. And meanwhile, the threat has changed from whatever position they were in to now bearing down on you or continues to shoot away. You know, I could just hear the gunshots in the background. I'm being shot at. Is it okay if I shoot back? Well, are the bullets really close? Can you hear them as they whiz by? Can you feel the heat? Or are they kind of bad shots? Well, no, they're pretty good shots.
Also, have you ascertained the preferred pronoun choice of the individual with whom you're in this gunfight? You got to get that.
Is the video going to make you look like you are actually putting down an aggressor, or does it really make you look like a victim? Because we don't want you to actually shoot back before you're a victim.
Well, and thanks for the call, Ralph. And here's the other thing. What's being proposed now in the city? You know, you want to put, I said this a million times, but it bears repeating. You want to put yourself on the opposite side of the skirmish line to the police? You want to say, police, you have no backing. You have no legitimacy. You want to eliminate the law enforcement power of police, responsible use of law enforcement power. Well, then you're opening up this city or any society to chaos, to mobocracy, which is what you see on the west and south sides of the city. So I would tread lightly before we make kind of wholesale condemnations or transformations. And this is particularly salient because of the mayor's race. Lori Lightfoot is proposing a new bureaucracy to oversee police. We've got this consent decree where now every time a police officer draws his or her weapon, that has to be documented.
Right. And we didn't have to do that before.
So, you know, micromanaging these sorts of situations by bureaucrats, politicians behind a desk in a faraway place probably isn't the best strategy to providing for the public safety. So, you know, this is why in this conversation, you try and limit it to the specifics of this case. The Chicago Police Department is on trial. Laquan McDonald is on trial. Laquan McDonald is part of the trial because his conduct that night is relevant to the discussion and to Van Dyke's guilt or innocence. But it's this specific instance. It is not to be extrapolated across 12,000 Chicago police officers. That's just ridiculous. But that's what's happening. Chip in St. Charles.
You know, the paid protesters and anarchists live in Chicago. And Chicago has ducked a whole bunch of things that have gone on around the country, like, you know, other cities have burned and have been, protested to the ground. But Chicago's not going to duck it this time. When this officer is found not guilty, which I think he will be, Chicago is all going to catch up with Chicago this time, is what I think is going to happen.
All right, thanks for the call, Chip. Sean from Melwood Park.
Point of being a conservative or being somebody who has principles is that you're able to think of things individually. What we demand in the Ford case is what we should demand in the Van Dyke case. These are individual situations. So to have these blanket statements like you don't want this and you don't want that, let's deal with the case at hand. And to conflate things,
I think that's what I just said.
But you bored me when you did it. To conflate things is also wrong as well. So for instance, Amy. Flager is a scumbag.
I exist? I'm here? Where are you talking to me?
Flager.
It's your lucky day.
When you're not interrupting me. Flager is a scumbag. You understand? Has been, is be, will be forever. Uh-huh. And that's why I don't buy that whole priest thing. Yeah, God likes him more than he does me. Sure he does. And as for the socialist scumbag, socialist, fraudulent, effeminate scumbag, Blaise Cupich, if we had a man in there, he would have thrown Flager out years ago. When he first got in, it would have been his first action. So those are two separate issues. I don't care what Flager does. He's a scumbag. Second thing is, it's a shame Van Dyke became a policeman.
We're only on the second thing?
The show ends at 9.
I wrapped up the second.
Hurry up.
Third thing is, it's too bad Van Dyke became a policeman, because with his ability to lie under oath and look in your face, he could have made millions as a senator. That's the real thing.
What is he lying about?
What are you talking about? He was backpedaling. Let's start there. Oh, you were backpedaling? He was walking towards me. Oh, he was walking towards me. He waved the knife. Oh, he waved the knife. You're a liar. You fired 16 bullets into him, and you didn't yell either. You're on video. Your jaw never moved. Never moved. And if we had the sound tape that mysteriously disappeared, we could prove it, too.
All right. See you, Sean. I mean, on the backpedaling thing, right, he clearly wasn't backpedaling on the video, and he... In the clip that we played, if you would listen, rather than just wait for your turn to rant, Sean, that what I thought I was doing that night and what that video shows I was doing are two different things. So, I mean, he conceded the point, and it sort of goes to his orientation that night. Now, if you think that he's lying, okay, you can think that he's lying. It's for a jury to decide. But, I mean, he's not pretending that he was actually backpedaling. He was testifying to what he thought he was doing, and the video shows he was not. He concedes the point. Hey. Brian Warner, former CPD officer. Brian, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. How are you? I was involved in a shooting, and it wasn't until after I reviewed the video several days later with the detectives that I got the true detail of what happened that day. There was a part of my shooting where when we bailed out of the car, our squad car continued to roll and hit another car. I'm doing the paperwork. I'm like, what's the traffic crash for? I'm like, your car rolled and hit another car. I'm like, it did? I'm like, I thought it just rolled through the intersection as we were firing at it and then hit the pole and ended up over there. And they're like, no, it hit another car. Never knew that until 3 days later. So that to think that you have all the information at night and then you can sort all that out, it's impossible. More importantly, I fired 7 rounds that night.
Oh.
The detectives asked me, was your gun fully loaded? I said, yes, it was. You had one in the chamber. Yes, it was. They asked me, how many times did you fire? I said, 3-4 tops. They said, no, you fired 7 times. I would have never known that.
Hmm.
It was firing into a rolling car. I hit the offender 5 times in the back seat of a car. I could never do that again if I tried. My training kicked in, and that's what happened that night. For Jason to think that he was retreating because Laquan was coming in on him is a reasonable thought to have. Because that's what a natural person would be doing. You would think that you'd be backpedaling, but because of your training says to eliminate the threat in front of you, you're actually going toward it and firing. So I think everybody should just step back and continue to listen to the facts. As Ralph said, he's always a reasonable man. We're not privy to everything that's going on in court. We're getting little bits of sound bites and everything again. So please be patient. And again, I have to put any of this stuff that Flager and all these other people are planning right now square on the footsteps of Rahm and Emanuel and Anita Alvarez for not doing their due diligence. Had they had a press conference and we discuss all the things we're discussing now at a press conference and they explain the facts, instead of people getting people's false hopes up, there's going to be a conviction here. We're not in this predicament. It's very frustrating and emotional for me. It was emotional for me to watch Jason yesterday. It's emotional for me to even talk about my shooting. So for anybody to take that lightly is just irrational and totally insensitive to what police do every day.
Brian Warner, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. See Heather McDonald, James O'Keefe, and Sheriff David Clark at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Dan and Amy, and I referenced this before, but I just want to put an exclamation point after it. This is a wonderful piece in the Leftist Daily Beast. Tasha Rain, the porn star teaching frat boys about consent. It's a wonderful porn star with a heart of gold story because, of course, as the D.C. Press Corps and Hollywood know, the best way to teach men to respect women and women to respect themselves is to elevate porn stars.
You know, it's a different take on an old topic, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe this time she'll get through.
Right. Yeah, no, sure. I mean, of course, it's Pretty Woman in real life. Of course it is.
A lot of people pledging this year.
Vote for Our Lives, which is a adjunct of March for Our Lives. This is the Parkland gun banning students cause celeb, right?
You have got to turn up your radios and pay attention to this ad.
The cast for Avengers cut an ad. Very much in keeping with sort of the Tasha Rain approach to getting to young people.
And they also threw in a few Parkland survivors.
Yeah, David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez.
Yeah, they're in there too. And here you go.
My first time.
I was nervous.
My first time.
Was in the back of a firehouse.
Mine was in a church.
It was amazing.
My first time, everybody clapped afterwards.
I mean, I didn't know how to do it,
where to put it, you know, where to slide it in.
There were so many options.
Like,
you never know what it's going to be like when you do it.
So finally, I just, you know, I just went, I just did it. I voted.
My first time with a
woman. Oh, they're talking about voting. I see
good,
what they did there.
My parents.
Yeah, but they keep, you know, the left keeps harping, oh, you have to respect women and we have to end this sexual discrimination. And then they're doing a ad like that.
Aren't
they
clever?
That's very sexual in nature. A lot of sexual innuendos in it.
Aren't they clever? They're so cool. I'd be willing to suspend my ability to think critically and wrap my entire identity around them if they would just let me be part of their crew. Right?
Sorry, honey. Boy, you don't make enough money.
From Rock the Vote to this. For more on this topic as well as Beach Party Kavanaugh, we're pleased to be joined by Ed Morrissey, who's the senior editor for HotAir.com, columnist for the weekend. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be on with you guys, as always.
How about that the combination of the GOTV effort for young people with the March for Our Lives crew, and then you got Tasha Rain, the porn star, teaching frat boys how to acquire consent in a male-female situation.
Yeah, that's classy. You know, it's yesterday I got an email from some public relations firm about a new comic book that just came out that has Stormy Daniels as the hero. You know, with the dramatic heroic pose on the cover, and I mean, I actually downloaded it just because I thought this can't be. They can't be serious about this, and unfortunately, they were very serious about it.
If you oppose Trump, then that's your first step towards heroism.
Apparently.
Last night, President Trump, I think he stepped in it when he called out Christine Blasey Ford and talked about she had one beer, and he was, and I felt that he was mocking her in a way. What kind of ramifications are this going to have, especially when it goes to the Senate floor for a vote?
I agree with you. I mean, this is really impolitic, I guess, is the best way to put it. I mean, certainly you can make an argument about Ford's credibility in that testimony, but, I mean, he's clearly making fun of it, too. And you can do that. There's no law against it, but I think it's an unwise move at a point in time where you're trying to hold together three very, very tricky votes in the Republican caucus for Kavanaugh, and it's three people who, A, don't really like Trump all that much, and B, are extremely sensitive to the idea of attacking someone who's alleging that they are a victim of sexual assault. And, I mean, certainly it may come out that Trump is entirely correct about this, but it doesn't look good. And I think that, you know, in politics, appearances do matter. And it's better, I think, for Trump to have stuck to the line that he'd been sticking to in public, which is that, you know, I want the Senate to do its job. I want it to have whatever resources it needs to have to get it done. I just want it to get it done quickly and have them make a decision. And other than that, I'm not going to comment. And so that type of thing really doesn't help. I mean, it just really obstructs the process of getting there.
I want to talk about Jeff Flake. Is there anybody in the Senate Republican caucus under the age of 85 who could take this guy into the Senate cloakroom and straighten him out, if you know what I mean? I mean, he's just intolerable to listen to all week while he, you know, gets squired around to all the cool places to hang out with Chris Coons and all of his D.C. press corps friends. And now he's making the temperament argument. I mean, honestly, this is so absurd. I would rather cast my lot with red state Democrats in terms of getting to 50 votes than worrying about what Jeff Flake's latest gambit is going to be.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, of course, is that you're not going to get any red state Democrats to come along unless you get 50 votes out of the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And so you can lose Jeff Flake, but then you can't lose Collins or Murkowski. If you don't get any of those three, you're not going to find two red state Democrats to cross the aisle in order to get to 50 votes so that Mike Pence can cast a tie-breaking vote. It's just not going to happen.
What do you think about what do you think about Graham's idea that if go ahead, vote it. If we've come up a vote or two short, then make the November 6th election a referendum on this, and red state Democrats like Manchin and Heidkamp and McCaskill and others are going to be toast and renominate him after that.
I don't think you renominate somebody who's already been shot down by a floor vote in the Senate. I think, first off, if I was Brett Kavanaugh, I'd absolutely refuse to do it. I mean, why would you go through that all over again? He's got a job on the appellate court. There's no reason to go through all of that all over again. They would move on to a different candidate. Lindsey Graham is making a provocative argument there, but Kavanaugh certainly wouldn't go through with it, and I don't think Trump would either. I think they would wisely move on to Amy Coney Barrett and demand that all the people who didn't vote for Kavanaugh because he's supposedly he's got toxic masculinity, therefore fall in line behind Amy Coney Barrett.
Oh, well, yeah, but she's got toxic Catholicity. She's going to be characterized as a theocrat who's going to, impose a national religion. You can guarantee that.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, they casted her that way in her confirmation hearing to the appellate court. Mm-hmm. You know, this was the dogma lives loudly within you moment from Dianne Feinstein that blew up in their faces a bit. Well, but, I mean, that's what they're going to wind up doing. They're going to end up going to Amy Coney Barrett, and that's the real shove-it-down-your-throat
move, because they could go to Thomas Hardiman, who was also a shortlister, who is apparently a little bit more popular among senators. But Trump being who he is, he would pick Barrett just to shove it back down their throats and say, you know, I dare you to do this again, because if you do, it's going to be very, very apparent what you're up to.
Well, it isn't over yet for Brett Kavanaugh, so that's good.
No.
But why in the world, and I know, Dan, I asked him this question earlier, why isn't the FBI sitting down with Christine Ford and talking to her?
I mean, that's a good question. I think that you can argue, and I think the White House argued, that she gave her sworn testimony in front of the Senate. You know, so she was questioned at length by Rachel Mitchell, and so the FBI can just simply work off of that. I mean, this is not an investigation. This is a background check. And that's something that people seem to be forgetting, is that all they're really doing is collecting witness statements and then providing them to the Senate Judiciary Committee. This is the reason why Chuck Grassley was saying an FBI probe is not a deus ex machina. This is basically the Senate Judiciary is capable of doing exactly what the FBI is doing right now.
But the only difference now, though, is in terms of the FBI questioning Ms. Ford, is you have a rebuttal witness in her ex-boyfriend statement.
Well, yes, and that's true. So, you know, with this statement, which apparently just came in yesterday, the FBI might want to go back and ask her about that to find out what her responses to that are. This is the reason why I was a little surprised to see that Dr. Ford's attorneys were insisting that the FBI interrogate her, because or take her statement, I guess is a better way of putting it. It's because I don't see any upside for her in that. They're going to start asking about some of the contradictions that came up in the testimony, and I don't think that's very helpful to Dr. Ford. I don't see how she's going to help herself by trying to elaborate on a story that's already been changing in some of the details.
Yeah, I agree.
We've had
I think that's bizarre.
You know, we call this ex-boyfriend day today because
Revenge of the exes.
What did you think of Swetnick's ex-boyfriend and the allegations that he made? And he actually has had a restraining order against her.
There was two ex-boyfriends, right?
Yeah.
The ex-boyfriend in Florida that had the restraining order, and then the other one, which was really kind of sad. I mean, here's the thing about that, plus Dr. Ford's ex-boyfriend's letter. We really haven't corroborated these things. They're under oath, but then so was Julie Swetnick's affidavit, right? I mean, and it was ridiculous. It was self-contradictory right from the beginning. We haven't really corroborated any of this stuff, and I think we should be careful about proceeding down these paths without having to make sure that we've got corroboration. But that's a lesson that we should have been applying all along, including to Dr. Ford and to Deborah Ramirez and all the rest of the people who were coming out of the woodwork to make wild allegations without any evidence whatsoever.
He is Ed Morrissey, senior editor for HotAir.com and a columnist for the week. Ed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Seems like an appropriate topic, given what's happening at the national level. Let's talk a little bionic penis. Why don't we?
Oh.
Going up. Now, this is not the bionic penis man who had
the original?
This is
what happened to the original? Something.
The bionic penis guy, the original guy, had a it was a gruesome accident.
Well, yeah, didn't he have a bike accident and his naughty bits when he was a kid and everything get kind of sliced off? Gosh, that sounds really graphic.
Something like that.
But something happened. Lovely. His first time didn't go so well.
It was a prostitute, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Let me just Google that here. We're not talking about him. We're talking about Andrew Wardle. He was born with a congenital abnormality. Like a lower abdominal wall had not formed properly. Bladder extrophy, if you want to be specific.
Okay.
Which there's no reason you would. Here's some charts here about how penis implant surgery works. Do you want to see that? Here's. I got your thumb. See that? No. All right. And so here's what I. So he has this condition.
And what's his name again?
In and out, Andrew Wardle. In and out of the hospital since till about 2012. When he was 39 years old, he finally gets thrown a lifeline in the form of the bionic penis.
Oh, that's great.
So you had urologist David Wood built him a new bladder.
His name's Wood. Do you know it was a 10-hour operation? It was a $50,000 penis, bionic penis.
50,000 pounds.
Oh.
That's a lot of weight.
Hey, now.
It's not about girth.
Uh-huh. I mean, they said that it was ridiculously big. I'm just saying. But go on.
Okay.
Well, that's what the ladies...
No, I know. Look, it's...
They're quoted in this article.
This is a story about science.
It was described as ridiculously big.
Yeah. Urologist Dan Wood built him the new bladder while his fellow member of the medical community, David Ralph, created his penis. David Ralph is a specialist in genital reconstruction.
Somebody has to be.
If,
it's certainly not going to be me.
If I hadn't gotten this radio gig. So here's the thing. He gets the bionic penis and, you want to.
Well, you test it out. Take it for a test drive. Just like a new car. You got to get behind that bad boy and see how it runs.
You want to work it out.
Yeah.
Can it withstand intimacy?
Right. Well, so he was a virgin. So what happened?
He was a virgin, much like Brett Kavanaugh. I don't know if Brett Kavanaugh has a bionic penis or not.
Okay, please go on.
His girlfriend, Frida, Fedra, God, I can't speak, Fedra, excuse me, they had relations.
So they had sex, okay, go on.
Uh-huh. And a week later, she found him on the floor, took him to the hospital. He was unconscious for 5 days.
Oh! What?
But he's okay. It's a cautionary tale about bionic penises.
Is that a side effect? That he could be in a coma for 5 days?
And if the erection lasts for more than 10 days, before it deflates, please
seek medical help.
See urologist Dan Wood.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.